Okay, so let's pick up. The last thing you did was the Tshuva Rambam to the Chachmei Lunel, where we saw the Rambam take a very strong position that the Gemara in Bava Metzia Kuv Zayin, the prohibition to look, stare at somebody's property, is conceptually distinct from what we call Hezegriya. Right now, we had suggested that one way, if you wanted to have a sharp distinction, was to highlight one as Hezek. Right, one is damage. I look and I cause damage with my eyes, however I do that. Maybe we'll have a share at some point on Ayin Hara, if you would like. We can bracket that maybe the end of the sugya. And Hezekriya, on the other hand, is maybe based on the Gemara at the bottom of Bet Amud Bet going on to Gimel and Aleph, from the case of the Gog and the Chatzer, maybe it's more about the prevention of usage of your property. The Rambam also draws a sharp distinction, but slightly differently. Right, the Rambam believes not only that, but he thinks that Lamaskana, we actually flip it. That the simple reading of the Gemara is the case of this, of staring is the most chamor, and then Hezekriya of Chatzer is less. But he thinks Lamaskana, we actually flip it, and that the case of staring is only a midat chasidut. Right, it's not even halacha to begin with. The type of damage that's caused is nominal. And that's why you suffice with actually the lower wall. And once we decide Hezekriya is Shmei Hezek, it actually ends up being more stringent than the case of the Gina, and you need 4 amot. Not everyone agrees with this assessment, but this is the Rambam's position. We know not everyone agrees. The Chachmei Lunel said, Rambam, we don't understand. It's a very strange tshuva. What strikes me as weird about it is that they were so respectful to the Rambam. Rambam, we really would love to hear what you have to say. You are Gaonenu, Morenu, Rabenu, right? Tzmeim anachnu l'tshuvato. And he just said, right, and he just responds, smart people like you shouldn't ask stupid questions. And it's not like it was a heated debate, like between me and Ezra or something, right? Where, I don't know, I might be harsh in my response. This was a letter that he had to think about what he was going to say. But okay, we'll leave that on the side. I don't understand. The Yad David asks the following question that I want to just sort of flesh out before we move on. So who is the Yad David? So this time I gave you the biography. Interesting person. So Rabbi Yosef David Zinsheim was best known for being the head of the Sanhedrin of Napoleon. So here's one of those historical things that you should know. Napoleon had a Sanhedrin. There we go. Okay? What? I mean, it wasn't like the Sanhedrin HaGadol HaYoshev Yerushalayim. It was the Sanhedrin HaYoshev Eitzel Napoleon. I don't know. Didn't have what? I mean, it was whoever he appointed. It was... Napoleon isn't held to our standards, okay? And if you tried to hold him to our standards, I don't know how well that would have gone for you. But he had great respect for Yosef David Zinsheim. He was from Treves, Germany. He moved to Alsace, right, and he became the leader there. And when Napoleon had this Sanhedrin, he appointed the Yad David, Rav Zinsheim, to be the head of this Sanhedrin. Now, the Sanhedrin, a lot of what it was Napoleon consulting them about Jewish, non-Jewish issues and getting their opinion, where they consistently took a bit more of a liberal approach, which is perhaps what Rami is talking about, consistently passing like the Meiri, that a lot of the distinctions between Jews and non-Jews apply only to ancient barbaric nations, barbaric idolaters, which the Meiri refers to as the Amim She'enam Gdurim B'Gidrei Adatot, right? The nations that are not civilized by religion. Okay? That's probably... What? Say it again? So, I mean, you know, it's even more than that. But yeah, for him, that's probably what it meant. Right? For him, that's probably what it meant. But the phrase he uses is enam gedurim begidrei adatot. Okay, they're not constrained by religion, right? They are barbarians. And therefore, most of these distinctions didn't apply to Napoleon. And yes, much ink has been spilled at to what extent they actually believed what they were saying, or, you know, it was a convenient position to invoke so that Napoleon didn't kill them. You know, Yesh Ladon, what? Yeah, I mean, you know, Napoleon was asking, do you really have a distinction between Jews and non-Jews? And they said, no, that's the barbarians. That's probably a smart answer. He was a little bit more on the liberal side. That is true. But the Chasam, what? Not the Meiri. David Zinn, I don't know if those categories really apply before the modern period. But I'm saying he's in the modern period. So, okay, it may be fair to say he's more on the liberal side. But the Chasam Sofer writes a glowing eulogy of him. When the Chasam Sofer is no liberal, meaning he was in the traditional camp. Maybe he did have certain liberal positions, but he had support. He had strong support in the traditional camp. So, you know, Rav Zinsheim is not someone I would say was a maskil, right? He was more liberal, you know. Okay, fine. I don't have a problem with that, right? He was. Meaning, Orthodox is a modern term, but he was in the last 200 years, so yes, he was in the Orthodox camp. More on the modern side. Okay, fine. So that is who he, that is him. But he asked the following question, which is the following, and I think it helps us sharpen the Rambam. Okay, did anyone actually read the Yad David? Anyone get a chance to actually read him? Or did you spend the time of the Rishonim? If you didn't, it's fine. Meaning, I wanted you to spend the time of the Rishonim. So no one read him. Okay, so let's read him quickly, okay? It's fine. So he asked what I think is an obvious... What? No one did? So, okay, so what does he say? Well, what's his question? Before, what does he say? What is his obvious question on the Rambam? He says, right, once the Rambam says what he says, so what's the problem?
That it should be the reverse.
Flesh it out here. Right, he quotes a Sefer Chazon Ovadia, not the modern Chazon Ovadia, Ovadia Yosef. I found it on a Hebrew book, some Ovadia I had never heard of. I tried to find some bio on him, didn't really get very far. Who said, wait a second, if the Rambam's right that staring at someone's property is only a midat chasidut, so why does the Gemara make such a big deal and say, don't buy property on the border of town unless you're going to put up a wall? Meaning, if the Rambam's right, right, the Rambam doesn't reject the halacha, but what is this like? Very dramatic, don't buy a property because someone might see you. If someone looking in and causing hezergia or nitpas lav gaganav, it's just a midat chasidut, meaning, shouldn't we reject this whole category if it's not a legal category to begin with? So what does the Yad David say? And I'm not sure the Rambam would agree, but I think the Yad David is helpful here because it highlights something we talked about last week. So what's the Yad David's answer? Look, five lines from the bottom, or four lines from the top, right in the middle, really. Lefi ani yadati says, what do I think, right? Remember, lefi ani yadati means, in my humble opinion, kavanat harav ha-magid, dibivadai afo pishevshar sheyazik ba'ayin hara, mikol makom chshashah rechokahi. Here's the point. Damage caused by Ayin Hara is real damage. But it's rare that it'll actually happen. Okay? V'lo shchiche klal rakti leitim rechokot. It only happens very rarely. U'mepnei zeh ein istur b'davar, kevin lo mitkaven lahazik, v'gam ezek lo shchiach. And therefore, it's not prohibited formally to stare. It's a midat chasidut because it's unlikely that it'll happen. And you didn't mean to, meaning you were just curious. So we tell the person buying a field, you should probably avoid buying property next to, immediately next to the city. Because sins you could be damaged, so try to avoid it. Why put yourself in a doubtful case of danger? And then he skips down next line. He says, it's better to be safe than sorry. Okay? That's basically what he argues. So now I want to take apart his argument because I think it's important. Right? This is what he quotes from the Chazon Ovadia. Because the Rambam is weird. Right? What the Yad David, the Chazon Ovadia are responding to is the Rambam is weird. In our Gemara, it's clear that in the hierarchy of which is going to be worse damage, which is worse, Hezekri in a Chatzer or the steering into a Gina, which is worse? The steering. The Gemara is very clear about this. Right? Because the Gemara said, can you prove from the fact that you can't stare that there is Hezekriya? And the Gemara answered, no, Gina shiny, Gina's worse. So therefore, it could be that the Gina case is usher, but the case of a Chatzer is permitted. So, it's very weird for the Rambam then to say the Havamina is that Gina is worse. And the Maskana is that Chatzer is worse. I mean, that's very strange, right? It's very, very strange. It's like, is it worse to punch you in the face? Or, right, or to, right, and cause $50 of damage to your jaw, right, or to steal $50 from you, right? It'd be very weird if you would say, well, obviously I can't punch someone in the face, because there I'm causing physical damage and causing monetary damage. But whether I can steal is less obvious. And then flip it and say, yeah, that was my Havamina, but Lamaskana, stealing is worse than assault. Meaning, like, you have to explain why you flipped it. Like, it doesn't make any sense. I don't know if that's a good example, but fine. Yeah. So the Yad David says, let's be careful. What he argues is, the damage that's caused by staring is, in potential, more severe. But it's less likely. And therefore, there's a sense in which it's more mekel and a sense in which it's more machmir. And the way he essentially reads the Rambam is that the Havamina was, look, if it's usher to stare because you're going to cause damage with Ayin Hara, so then it should be obvious that it's usher Hezekri. And the Gemara rejects it and says, no, the damage of Ayin Hara is worse. That's real damage. But the way the Rambam will read it will be as follows. Yes, it's true that the damage that could be caused is worse. But if you're asking on a legal level which is more enforceable, the answer is as follows. Consistent, certain, lower level inconvenience, damage, whatever you want to call it, is still more legally enforceable than possible and rare damage, even if when that damage happens, it's worse. And therefore, the way the Rambam Lamaskana reads the sugya is, Hezek Re'iyah, once we decide there's such a thing, is enforceable, because once you say that the right to privacy, an invasion of privacy is recognizable, and causing people not to be able to use their field is something that we can enforce by law, and that's a category we recognize. It may be a lower level damage, but it's certain that if you don't put up a wall, it's going to happen. And therefore, you need to build a wall that's going to prevent it. But the Ayin Hara case, we call it Midat Chasidut, according to the Rambam. We call it a non-legal category because, yeah, if it turns out that at exactly the right time you looked and it caused an Ayin Hara, whatever that means, right? Whether it's the rays coming out of the eyes, which apparently only happen once in a while, I doubt the Rambam really thought that, right? The Rambam probably agrees more with the Meiri. That what's Ayin Hara is if someone's staring at it and then he starts talking about your property, people will start talking and then they'll get jealous. And if they get jealous, right, so maybe that'll lead to, I don't know, right, to someone, whatever it's going to lead to, right? If they're jealous, so then they'll try to take advantage of you. They'll try to come up with an excuse to hurt you. They'll, you know, avoid business deals with you out of spite, right? You know, we all know that there are cases like that, right? That jealousy will lead to disastrous results. But not every time someone walks by, like, we all know that jealousy could lead to someone stealing your, you know, $250,000 sports car, right? But in the end of the day, most people who walk by and look at your sports car will just say, eh, nice car, right? 95% of people, that's their reaction. Well, maybe not. 50% of people will say that, 25% of people won't notice the car at all, but they won't know that, right? And then there's some people who might think, you know, oh, I really like that car, let me steal it. But in the end of the day, that reality, even though it might end up being worse, right, is not as common. And therefore, what the Yad David says, that explains why, according to the Rambam, in one respect, it was more obvious that you can't stare, but in another respect, it's Hezek Re'ia is more enforceable, because they're really two different type. They're two different categories. There's actual damage, which is uncertain and rare, versus lower level damage / Minyan Hashem Shut, but consistent and certain. And therefore, there's a Chumra and Kula to each. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly the Rambam's point, right? That's the Rambam's point. And this, but what the Yad David, I think, is doing is clarifying it, is saying, but, right, because what's weird is that how did you go in a complete flip? And the Yad David's answer is you didn't. It's that, yes, Ayin Hara could be worse. It just doesn't normally happen. So it's obvious that the right thing to do is try to avoid it. But it's not enforceable in the same way, because even though the consequences could happen, right, it's... Look, it's the same way that, it's the same way that, yes, are you more likely to die as a pedestrian than as a, right, a reckless driver? The answer is probably yes, right? You can get run over by a car, right? But, you know, reckless driving is illegal, so it's not a good example, right? Look. What? Which is more likely? Okay, dying in a car accident, right? Or dying from bungee jumping, right? It's probably dying in a car accident, right? But because everybody, right? Most people have cars, and most people drive on a regular basis. We put a lot more restrictions on how you drive. Speed limits and right and stop signs and traffic lights and etc. Because since it happens all the time, even though, right, if you die in a bungee jumping accident, it's going to be quite gruesome, right? But most people don't go. It doesn't happen so often. And when you go, most people take the safety precautions. So even though it might be more gruesome, we'll tell people, look, I wouldn't go bungee jumping, and if you do, really take the safety precautions, but we might not write that into law. Because how many people want to go to begin with, right? And most people who are going are putting on the straps and whatever, and they're thrill seekers, right? As opposed to driving, where, yes, right, the death probably won't be as gruesome. Most of the time it's not, right? But we know that on balance, more people will get hurt in car accidents, and therefore we put a lot more restrictions, right? So which is worse? You know, it depends, right? It depends how you look at it. Yeah. I promise you the Rambam didn't think Ayin Hara was laser eyes, okay? I'm not saying that it's laser eyes. I'm saying there are people who believe that. Yeah, it's a Meiri, yeah. but it's not that common that on the edge of the city that someone will be walking by and stare at your fruit tree and get so jealous that he'll start talking about it, and that talking about it will lead not just to bad mouthing but to actual physical damage. Meaning, There's a lot of steps that have to happen there. It happens. No, it doesn't sound that way, because it sounds like you can't stand next to it and look in. It doesn't sound like an issue of trespassing. Yeah, but physical barriers like that also prevent people from staring. They just do. Even if it's not taller. Again, think about it. People in their front, right, in front of their house, will sometimes have a fence that goes up to here, right? And if... when people have an open front yard, an open, right, lawn, right, it's less creepy if people are, like, hanging around looking in their direction. Once there's a fence, even up to here, right, it's much creepier when people just stare over the fence, even though it's only up to here. Am I wrong? This is my feeling, that people staring over a fence is creepier, even if it's not... I mean, it's very creepy if the fence is, like, up to there and they climb over and stare over. That's very creepy. In a konami. But... no? I don't know. I don't know. If I caught someone just staring at my beautiful flowers for hours on end, I might get a little bit creeped out. I don't know. That's just me. I don't know. Okay. Fine. Good. So, Ezra, this is for you now. Okay, good. So until now, we've been assuming that whatever hezekiah is, it's one thing. And there might be other categories, like ayinara, like whatever, that, like tzniut, that introduce other isurim that are also privacy-related, visual-related, but they're distinct from Hezekriya, and therefore it's possible to draw sharp distinctions and formulate categories. But as we noted, often the Gemara is not clear, because in the context of Hezekriya, it invokes the Gemara in Bava Metzia, which seems to be at Ayin Hara. It invokes a case of Ishtamshut of the Gog and the Chatzer. The Gemara in Daf Samech doesn't say it's Hezekriya, but Rashi thinks that it's Hezekriya, and that seems to be speaking about privacy as a tzniut value, right? As a ben adam l'makom value, not just ben adam l'chaveiro. So one option methodologically is to do what we've been doing, which is to say, well, either let's collapse them into one thing and say, like the Aruch HaShulchan, that everything is Ayin Hara because it's all collapsed into one, or to be like the Rambam and the Sma and say, no, there are different categories. They're actually fundamentally distinct, right? But Ezra kept pushing back and saying, that's very nice and neat. That's very nice and Occam's razor of you. But how do you know? Maybe the truth is that Hezekriya is a very messy category, which has a lot going on, all within Hezekriya, and therefore any attempt to say with certainty that there is a difference between Hezekriya and Ayin Hara cases, Hezekriya and Tzniut cases, is, and to say what motivates one doesn't motivate the other is misguided. Maybe Hezekriya is visual damage, which is itself motivated by multiple values, and therefore Hezekriya itself might sometimes mean one thing and sometimes mean the other, and it'll be very messy. And I said, I really wish it didn't mean that way. And I still hold that. I really wish it didn't mean that. And the Rambam clearly doesn't think it means that, right? And many people don't. But one very major Rishon was totally thinking the way Ezra did, and he said, instead of doing what I did and asking each time and saying, oh, does this case, is it distinct from Hezekriya, or is it equivalent to Hezekriya, but Hezekriya is one thing, whatever it is, right? He just took all the different hints in the Gemara, and what did he do? Yeah, that's Hezekriya of type A, that's Hezekriya of type B, that's Hezekriya of type C. Good luck figuring out what they all are, but Hezekriya is a very complex category. Right, it's a catch-all for a lot of different things, and you know what? They're not going to be identical. And that Rishon was the Ramban. Right, now who is the Ramban? Let's do bios. I didn't give him your bio because he's a bit more famous than Rav Zinsheim. Yeah, who is he? Who is he, Ezra? Thank you, Nachmanides. Very good. He's called Nachmanides because his name is Rav Moshe ben Nachman. Yes. What? He did disagree with the Rambam on some things. Very good. Yeah. Where does he live? When does he live and where does he live? He lives in Spain. Cordoba, thank you. Technically Cordoba. Which part of Spain? Christian or Muslim Spain? Christian or Muslim Spain? Christian, thank you. Yes, Christian Spain. He lives in Christian Spain. What years? Pajore Oter, come on. You looked it up? Or you're guessing? What? 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 That's the... you're thinking the Rambam was 1140 to 1205 or 1204. His exact years are... Let's get it. The Ramban's exact years are 1194 to 1270. He's from Girona. What? He's from Girona in Spain. What? What? The Ramban was in a... No. The Ramban was in a disputation. Let's talk about the Ramban, okay? The Ramban is the Renaissance man of the Rishonim. He writes a Perush on Chumash. He writes a Perush on Shas. He writes Shuvot. He writes Halachot. He is a Kabbalist. He's an early Kabbalist. He is one of the... Right, in terms of recorded Kabbalah, he is one of the early students of his Rebbeim and Kabbalah, or Ezra and Azriel of Girona, in turn, who are students of Rav Yitzchak Sagi Nahor, Isaac the Blind. So he's a Kabbalist. He writes a parish on Sefer HaMitzvot. He writes a parish on the Rif. He's a... Right? And his works are very different. The Ramban is ala Torah, is a literary interpretation of Torah. Okay, he's in Christian Spain. He starts basically that Beit Midrash. His immediate students, the Rashba, who we'll see in a moment, Rav Shimon HaDeret, the Ra'a, Rav Aaron Halevi. The next generation of students are people like the Ritva. Okay, that's the Ramban. Okay, Ramban is very important to know. Super, super, super important as things go. Yeah, now, I guess, let's do the next bio first. Then we'll see his student. First, let's see the Ramban, then his student. One of his main students is the Rashba, who is? What's his name? Ben Aderet. Shimon Ben Aderet. And, yes. Okay, so he's a little bit later, right? So we're talking more 13th century than 12th century. Right. Okay. Also, the Rashba writes a parish on Shas. He writes a parish on Agadita. He writes many, many tshuvot. The Rashba writes about 5,000 tshuvot. Okay. So the Ramban, in his parish on Baba Batra Nuntet, weighs in. So Ezra, since you were channeling the towering spirit of the Ramban, why don't you take him? And I will note that one of the frustrating things about the Ramban, this is true of several Rishonim, is that Al HaTorah is like the clearest writer in the world. Beautiful, literary, well-structured. On Shas, he has a very different style. It's, you know, it's like the Rashbam. Al HaTorah, he's very succinct and very clear. And in the Gemara, as you'll see, he's very verbose. Certain people, just the way they wrote Al HaTorah is just not the way... It's not like Rashi. Rashi's like pretty consistent. Okay, but take the Ramban. Take him away. Okay, so let me just give you background. The much of the third parak of Bava Basra, which starts at Chav Chet, ends at Daf Samech, is talking about Chazaka. Chazaka means a lot of things, but Chazaka there means... in the beginning of the parak means squatter's rights. Meaning, how many years do you have to sit on a property till we assume it's yours simply because you squatted there? And the latter half talks about a lot of the nizge shchenim, which is at what point is something that a neighbor shouldn't be doing, but they did it for 5 years or whatever, at what point do we assume that the fact that no one ever challenged them is implied permission. Okay? And then he got a chazaka, and now the neighbor can't turn around and say, you can't do it. So in some cases, the answer is, it takes time. In certain cases, the nezeg is so egregious that we say, look, if someone didn't challenge it right away, it's the type of thing that should have evoked a response immediately upon provocation. So if they didn't respond, they automatically get the rights to continue that way forever. And some things we say, they're so egregious that even though someone should have responded, we give people the rights to later on to say, you know what, I thought I could handle it, but I can't. This is insane. Stop him and let him stop, right? So those are the different possibilities you get in the Gemara. Yes. Yes, that's also part of the complexity. Yeah, that's part of the complexity too. Buying property, yes, but let's leave it for now. Yeah, that's what he's talking about though, yeah. Correct. Meaning that it's not the thing that you should assume that you have the rights to do, but if you do it and no one stops you, right? Sometimes we say, ah, he didn't stop you. That means he doesn't care. Because a normal person would have been provoked immediately. What? Possibly yes or no, but Baba Basra is very rarely talking about Isurim. It's usually talking about rights, right? Monetary rights. And again, the answer might not be yes, meaning, right? It could be that, look, you know, you think about it, right? Sometimes neighbors will assume, you know, they shouldn't have done it, but it doesn't mean it's malicious, right? Sometimes people will just assume that no one cares if they do, right? You know, some people are just, there's no way you would care if I threw a party at 2 a.m. Like, why would you care, right? You know, like, you know, and sometimes it's just cultural differences, right? Like, you know, like, yeah, in certain places. Exactly. Or 2 a.m. Look, when I was in YU, they would look at you, you know, the locals in Washington Heights would look at you as you're crazy if you thought they shouldn't be blasting music full blast at 2 a.m. all night. They only wake up at night. It's unbelievable. It's like a weird culture. But like, you know, you have to get used to the what? The local population, the people who live there permanently, not the YU students. Washington Heights is an interesting mix, right? On one side, you have the elderly German Jewish population. On the other side, you have YU students. But most of the culture there is not that. Okay? Whatever. It's an interesting culture. Look, I would never have a havamina that in the middle of the night during the summer you should have a water party. And the way you should do that is by, you know, going over the fire hydrant and yanking off the thing. But this is totally standard in the Heights. They just like to, you know, instead of having a water fight with water guns, they just, you know, go to the fire hydrant and start blasting water in the middle of the street. It's a different culture. I don't know. It's whatever, but look, every place has their own. It's like, sure, in America, if you told people that, yeah, starting at about age 5, I let my kids wander the neighborhood by themselves for hours, right? They think you're crazy. But in Yishuvim, you know, that's what people do. Yeah, not. It's really weird. I mean, look, I can't bring myself to let my, yeah, you know, 6-7-year-olds just wander. But I'm telling you, like, these 5-year-olds, they just wander. They're like, they go up to my son, do you want to join our chabura? We're just wandering, and like at 7-8 o'clock at night, you'll see parents. Have you seen my 5-year-old? I saw him going that way. I'm like, you know, people have different. It's a different culture. There are different expectations. So sometimes the answer is they just don't. You know, people have different assumptions of what's okay. You know, and sometimes you learn to be okay with it, right? Like, yes, do I think that at 10-11 o'clock at night it should be quiet? But look, we've been in lockdown for 6-7 months. So at some point in the middle of, I don't know, the summer, Pesach, one of my neighbors, right, they have teenage kids, and they decided to have a movie night, right, in the backyard adjacent to my house, projected onto the wall. I don't think in America that would have gone over so well at 11 at night. But in Israel, you know, whatever. And like, at the end of the day, did I think it was a great idea? No. But I was mochel it, right? Because I understand it's a lockdown. What are these poor teenagers doing? You know, like, you guys know it's frustrating, right? Like, and you've only been in for a few weeks. So, like, I was willing to be mochel and let them watch a movie very loud. Because, and to be fair, what was I supposed to tell them? Go inside and watch the movie? No, it's safer for them to be outside in a backyard projecting out on a wall where they can have distance and it's outside and there's ventilation. So the answer is, are they wrong? Right? That's what I'm saying. Wrong is a hard word here. Meaning, it could just be the type of thing that normal people would elicit a response. But if you do it, either intentionally, you know, either maliciously or not maliciously. The fact is that at some point, if someone doesn't say anything, right? Right? Like, you know, take that case. And if at the beginning of the movie I would have opened my window and said, hey, it's 11 o'clock at night, can you turn off the movie? Right? So then I would expect them to turn it off. But if an hour into the movie, right, I would do it, they could legitimately say, look, it's been blasting the same way for an hour. I mean, yes, okay, technicalities, fine. But you get the point. I'm not saying this is a formal, I'm giving you an example, okay? Yeah, more, look, realistically, they could have done that. Look, I mean, realistically, but if we wanted to make it, you know, more interesting, so, like, the way it's actually, it was the adjacent backyard to mine, but the backyard below me on the mountain, right, like, behind both of us, is a friend of mine who's a die-in. So theoretically, I could have just screamed out, we could have had, you know, a court case then and there in the middle, you know, defer to him, I wouldn't have to poskin, you know. But, what? Anyways, so, what? What? In a fraud, possibly. I don't know. These aren't like rebellious teenagers. They're just teenagers who've been shut in for 7 months. Like, I don't, you know. Again, like, you know, my second grade son, when they did their first Zoom post Sukkot, and they said, you know, what exciting things you do over Sukkot, pretty much every one of them said, listed off the Masechtot they made a Siyum on. So the culture around Efrat is very possibly that if the rabbi said you shouldn't be doing that, it's usher, then they might actually listen. I have good neighbors. I'm not complaining at all. Okay? I'm not complaining. Does this bother you? I don't know. Why? I fully, like every, you know, I always feel bad. It's like, you know. My kids love it. They love it. I don't have free time. I had to, like, beg my son to give me time to finish my Yerushalmi because he was insisting that we keep learning. Like, what do you mean? Well, that's exactly the point. It's peer pressure, right? That's the cool thing to do. But we don't, like, it's not like pressure. It's like we learn with the kids. They enjoy it, you know. You know, there's even, we even have TV shows about Mishnah for them. Yes. Rav Yosef Tzrimon put out a whole, my kids love it. Over Sukkot, they think it's hysterical, because, like, I grew up in America. So, like, if someone told me when I was younger, ooh, I'll let you watch TV now, you can watch the Mishnah show, right? I would have thought I'm being cheated. But no, my kids are like, we're, like, begging us to binge watch this Mishnah show. It's hysterical. It's Ratzim La Mishnah. It's put out by the rabbi of Alon Shvut Darom. It's literally, like, it's like a whole series that he has on multiple Masechtot, which is, like, with, like, real production crowd, you know, crews and actors and whatever. So he goes through Sukkah, Beitzah, Rosh Hashanah, Brachot.
What, like a show? Or like...
Yeah. So part of it is like, so different ones are different ways. Some they play out the Mishnah. Some are like drama comedies about the Mishnah. Part of it is Rav Rimon. like, actually teaching them the methodology of how to learn Mishnah at the end of it. And, like, it just, over Sukkos, Rav Rimon did a Ratzim LaMishnah live, like a Zoom. And my kids were, like, so excited. We let them stay up late to watch it. It was, and, like, we went on. And the Zoom maxed out. There were hundreds of families on it, and then the rest had to go onto YouTube Live. It was crazy. It was insane. Yes, it's a little bit, it's interesting. And then they had a question and answer. Like, the way we have question and answer, they had question and answer afterwards. And it was the most, what? It was the most corona, like, one of the kids, a 7-year-old kid, first question was, Harav Limon, I really want to eat in the sukkah, but my father is in bidud, and we put him in bidud in the sukkah, so I can't be mekayim the mitzvah, because I have no sukkah to go to. Do I still get the mitzvah? This is a 7-year-old. I was very happy I live where I live, I gotta say, you know. But, let's get back to the Ramban, now that I've made you all feel inferior. You should go on. You should go watch it. Ratzim LaMishnah. It's fun. YouTube. YouTube. What? Yes. It's. Oh, I actually, I think they had the Ratzim LaMishnah in English said. I don't know what exactly is translated. It might just be, you know, subtitles. I don't know. Look, you know, it is an interesting phenomenon that in Israel, the Dati Lumi community has much more of a, you know, in America mostly, like, I don't know, pop Torah culture is mostly in the yeshivish community. You know? Like, the, like, Midos books and things like that. In Israel, it's much more popular, I think, that there's, like, you know, kids pop Torah culture that actually exists. You know? Part of it is just that the whole community, like, the whole country is a little bit more traditional that way. Right? Like, you know, often the winners of Chidon HaTanach, which is, you know, Chidon HaTanach, like, you don't know Chidon. Israel has on Yom HaTzmud every year as a Tanakh competition, right, for kids. And you know, the winners aren't always dati, right? Like, a lot of them, the winners are secular, just because, like, it's part of the culture. Tanakh is part of the culture. Not everybody, but, like, it is part of the culture. And, like, I think at least 2 years running, the Zamar HaShana, right, like the singer of the year, are Dati people for Frum songs, you know, just because the culture, right? Like, last year was Yishai Ribo, right, who's, you know, like, Haredi Svardi, I think, I'm not really sure, Chardal Svardi, maybe, I'm not really sure, and Hanan Ben Ari, who's like Dati Lumi. It's a different culture. So, with that aside, now that I've introduced you to Israeli culture, you'll meet. Hopefully, you'll meet my kids at some point. You know. Look, at least my kids aren't weird among their friends here. When I was in Toronto, it was crazy. Every day, their teachers were like, "That my son was 5 or 4 or 5. Your son said that he learned Daniel. Is that true, or is he lying to me?" I'm like, no, he really knows Daniel. And then, like, he would tell them the story of Daniel, which the teachers didn't necessarily know the story of Daniel, so they didn't quite know to gauge whether it was true or not. So, Ramban. So that's what Ramban is talking about. He's talking about, right, we got on this as to what are the expectations in your community, right? Blasting a Ratzim LaMishnah party. Fine. So he says, Lo Amru, yeah, Chazaka bin Ezekin. You know, let me get you the key line. Lo Amru Chazaka bin Ezekin el Benizke Mama. So he says that the Chazaka that we talk about, that you can assume now you have rights, is by monetary damage. So he mentions some of the cases of water streams, etc. So there, Adam mochal kotlo afilu yipolo to mamash. Because there, it might be that in certain cases, people will say, look, I'm willing to let you have your stream of water, even if it might damage my wall. Because, you know, I understand why you want to have a stream of water or a well in your... So I'm willing to be mochal, and okay, and if it damages my wall down the line, okay, that happens. Aval. But he assumes, remember I said there are certain things that are so bad that no matter what happens, we'll say there's never a chazaka. So he says, so smoke, right? If someone is constantly, right, burning things, right, in your backyard, right? It's just, or he has a particularly smelly outhouse right next to your house. We just assume you can't handle it. So when you say, enough is enough, I understand that you want a bathroom close to your house, but like, oi, I can't handle it anymore. We tell him, you're right, ein lam chazaka. Yes. No, this is even if you... It depends where. If you write it in a shtar and you make a kinyan, maybe not. But like, even if you didn't protest in this case, So he says, V'zeo taimel sh'Rabbi Yosef bekar korshis n'vani ne'adat mitzar nezikin hen bekach. And this is the key line. Now, four lines in. Okay? He said that, which is the case that you can always protest to things that hurt you personally. Okay, Ezra, pick up. Four lines in. V'hu adin... The kol shekein, the same halacha, even more so for what? It is what? What, right? Hezek riya is damage to your person. So, which side of the equation the Ramban fall out on? Is hezek riya damage, or is it miniyat hishamshut, right? Is it the prevention of usage? Which is it? Damage, very clear. Well, watch what he says. And now look, and look at his next line, which confuses me to no end. But read it, Ezra. Okay. He says, it is direct damage because either Ayin Hara, or because Lishna Bisha, meaning people will speak Lashon Hara about you, or because of Tzniut, meaning what did he just do? Right, he folded a bunch of things in together. Right? Because tzniut, if you ask me what's tzniut, I don't know, violation of tzniut, is that damage? Is that miniyut? I'm not really sure. Sounds more like it prevents you from using. Ayin hara, damage, lishna bisha, you know, lashon hara, yeah, sort of like that, but what does he say? Ayin hara is damage, but damage in a sense that it folds in a lot of different things. And he says, va'od, So I don't know if he thinks they're distinct, right? If he thinks that it's, right, Ayin Hara leads to Lishna Bisha, or he's more thinking Ayin Hara metaphysically and Lishna Bisha more naturalistically, right? Meaning, I don't know. My guess, it sounds like he thinks they're distinct. Yeah, the ode. Right, and he says, furthermore, who knows exactly how much you have to get to be, to right, to waive your rights to it, right? Like, it's much harder to quantify this much staring I can handle, that much I can't, right? It's the type of thing where, like, you know, whatever, right? Either I can handle you looking in, but at some point I start thinking it's prying, or we've been in lockdown and you've been living in your backyard, so I'll be mochel it if you're looking into my backyard because, like, you haven't been allowed out of your house in 6 months. But, like, on a normal year, please, you want to, you know, hang out like that, go somewhere else while you're staring in, whatever, right? It's very hard to quantify, yeah. But remember, only Rashi thought that was Ayin Hara, that was Hezek Riya. He said in the Gemara, it's not clear. Right? Yeah. So he says, but now watch what he does. Now he goes Yehonatan's direction. Yehonatan's question before, and he says, and even if you are actually Mochel, right? Yehonatan actually said, it's okay, you can do this. It's still Asur. Why? Because this isn't just about damages. What is it? Isurin. He wasn't allowed to do it. It's one thing. He said there are some types of neighborly things where there's no isur involved. It's just this is what I'm allowed to demand property-wise, but you didn't do anything wrong, per se. So there, Mechila works. But Hezekria, it's not just that I have the right to demand it. You are prohibited to be staring in. Oh, that changes it entirely, because it's not just a agreement issue, it's you did something wrong. If you're doing something wrong, you never have the right to do something wrong. Right? So he says, you can't stare. And since it's also written to stare at you, you can't. It's impossible to expect a guy to stand there all day with his eyes closed. And therefore, part of the reason that we tell him shut your window isn't just because I always have the right to protest, but because, right, we tell him shut your window so you stop violating Isurim, right? So, and then he goes on to similar cases. So what does the Ramban do? The Ramban makes things very complicated for us. Because the Ramban says, it means at least three different things, and it swallows up two completely different things. One is the rights of the neighbor, and the other is the Isurin that you have in terms of violating privacy. There's an Isur component, and there's three different factors that lead to the rights component. And Hezekiah is complicated because it has multiple factors folded into each other. Part of it is actually damage, but part of it is Isurin, and part of it sounds like it's Tzniut, which is either on the Isur or on the Minyan Hishtamshut. I don't even know. Right? Meaning, for all the people we saw who tried to make clear distinctions, say there's Ayin Hara and there's Tzniut and there's Hezekiah, the Ramban just says, oh, there are things that sound like Hezekiah, they're about Tzniut. Hezekiah sometimes about Tzniut. Ayin Hara, that sounds good to check. Right, all these fall under Hezekiah. Isur, Nezikin, there are implications that it's Usur, Gemara and Bava Metziah, and there are implications that it's just about property rights. Yes, yes, and yes. And if you've gotten confused yet, the answer is, as Ezra said, well, sometimes the right answer is Occam's razor is not a principle of necessity. Occam's razor means, all things being equal, we assume that you go with the simplest answer. But sometimes the evidence points in different directions. So instead of trying to formalize the category distinctly like the Rambam, he says what Ezra says and says, look, there's 10 different implications of the Gemara. They all sound like they might be related to Hezekiah. The answer is yes. And therefore, you want to try to be predictive from one type of Hezekiah to the other? Good luck. Hezekiah itself is a messy category which has elements of Isser, elements of Mazik. Even within Mazik, there are three different types of Hezek. Some are Tzniut, some are Ayin Hara. Right? So, I'll finish my sentence, then I'll take Yonatan's question. So therefore, one direction was to conflate, but boil it down to one principle, like Ayin Hara, Aruch HaShulchan. The other was to say, there are two or three different principles, and let's carefully define each one. The Rambam, the Sma. And then, the third approach in the sugya is to say, look, different sugyas seem to be saying different things, so instead of explaining why they all mean one thing, or explaining why there are multiple things going on, say there are multiple things going on, and they're all the same anyways. It's just a complex entity called Hezekiah. Yeah, and that's what the Ramban thinks. Okay, good. Yes, Yonatan. I would say the latter, right? It sounds like it's not a catch-all. Right, it's not that there are multiple things that we call Hezekiah but are really distinct. I think it's the opposite. It's, no, Hezekiah is a complex category which is created by multiple factors which, for different reasons, from the world of Isurim, the world of Nezek, the world of Tzniut, all of those meld together to create a complex of values that force me to protect your privacy. Because, look, as much as I'm saying it's messy, there is an intuitive logic to the Ramban, which is, Hezekiah is, when can I force you to grant me privacy? And the answer is, there's a lot of reasons that privacy is valuable. And therefore, all of them are part of the picture, right? Privacy is important because it allows for a dignified society, regardless of whether I care, right? Halacha wants you to maintain privacy, right? But it also respects people's privacy in the sense that I want to be have privacy. That's also part of the picture, right? All these are part of why privacy is important, right? And right, think about it, right? Sometimes we say you have the right to privacy, and there we just mean that if someone wants you to give them privacy, you have to give it to them. And sometimes we say you really shouldn't be talking about such sensitive matters, right? Right? You're making people uncomfortable by sharing your deepest secrets, right? Because sometimes it's just, right? Not because you're sharing them, right? Your privacy isn't violated, and we tell you, please keep that private. These are private matters, right? Not everyone wants to hear it, right? There's a norm, right? These are all parts of what we mean when we say privacy. Yeah. Yes. Well, the Ramban is focusing on the person violating the Hezer Griya, but let's finish off with the Rashba, right? And let's see if he says the same thing. You know, he doesn't say that explicitly. He might mean that in Siyut, I don't know. But let's look at the Rashba, right? Because we said that the case of putting windows next to windows, that seems to be about you being obligated to maintain your own privacy, right? That it's, we're all obligated to maintain a private society, right? And therefore, it's on both of us, right? The Ramban doesn't explicitly say that's part of Hezer Griya, but you'll see that the Rashba seems to. So let's quickly look at the Rashba. The Rashba says, in 15, V'chein l'meidim minag ha-medina, abo b'zol eskim olav. We learn from the Minhag Medina, etc. Ka'ota shashaninu makam shenagu livnot gvil gazik kfisin levinim. Bone in akok Minhag Medina. Upershu akol latzui hu tzividafna. Fine. Okay, actually, before I read the Rashba, what is going to be the big Nafka minute to Yehonatan's question? What's the Nafka minute to be saying that Hezer Griya is only ever a prohibition for you to damage someone else versus saying that it includes an obligation for you to maintain privacy? What's the Nafka minute? Correct. Well, you don't care. If you think Hezer Griya is always ever about damages of some sort, then you can never talk about Hezer Griya when it's me not caring about my own privacy. Maybe there's something else going on, right? But if you think that part of what motivates Hezer Griya is that the Torah wants you to maintain privacy, so then sure, 90% of the time Hezer Griya is going to mean that someone else can't damage you. But the same principle might motivate us to tell you, you have to be a private individual, and that's the Rashba. The Rashba, against all odds, right? Because Hezer Griya sounds like damage. It doesn't sound like your obligation to maintain your own privacy. The Rashba says, no, no, no. The fact that Torah values privacy is what tells us that you have to value your own privacy and forbids other people from violating. It's actually not, it looks like a principle of damage, but it's actually a complex principle which both forbids damage and but the same exact principle requires you to maintain your own privacy. And that's what the Rashba writes. And therefore he says, for certain violations of privacy, mechila won't work. He says, Mikomako mimnagu shalahakbit klala hezegriya shalabatim v'chatzero, minog betodu ve'eno minog. If the custom is to not care at all about hezegriya in your houses, it doesn't work. She'ein because forgiveness, waiving rights, only matters by monetary law. I can tell you, you're allowed to damage my property. Right? I can tell you that. But you never have the right to throw off the safeguards of the Jewish people. And to not act in a Tsanua, modest way, uvigorin listalik shchina miyisraelhu. Because where's the Gemara on Samach say that the reason that the shchin, that Bilam said the shchina dwells amongst the Jews is because you maintain sniut. So he says you can't say I'm mochel. I don't care if God is among the Jewish people. Things don't work that way, right? That doesn't work. Ditznan lo yiftach adam chalonotav lechatzar hashutvin. The Garcina Labi Gamara Minani Milan Bi Ochran Damarkrav, Isa Bilamari Navayart Yisrael Shochin Lishvata, Mara, Rasha in Pitchehen, Michuvan and Zeleze, Omar Uyan Elo Shetishcha Shinan Elehen, Benehen. And remember, when I read the Gemara in Daf Samach, I said, at first glance, I would distinguish this from Hezer Griya, because Hezer Griya, until now, we've been talking about damages. That always focuses on the damager and the damagee, right? The damaged, the Mazik and the Nizak. Daf Samech, which talks about society's obligation to maintain tzniut, sounds like it's not his agree, it's something else. Right? And therefore it would be very strange if someone conflated that Isser with Hezegriah. Because Hezegriah should be the type of thing you should be allowed to be mochel. It's about Nizikin. And therefore I said, do we have a pasuk for Hezegriah? Probably not, because that you have a pasuk for Tzniut, but all the Hezegriahs are distinct. But the Rashba comes in and says, not exactly. The pasuk that we have that tells you that Torah wants you to maintain tzniut, not only is that a mitzvah to maintain tzniut, but it's simultaneously what motivates us to tell you you have to care about your own privacy, and it's also what motivates Hezegriah. And this, like the Ramban before him, makes this very complicated. Why? Because as we already said, sure, there are certain types of Hezegriah that you can't be mochel, but there are certain types of Hezegriah that you can be mochel. So that means he has a complex theory, where either he believes that there's minimal layers of tzniut that you can't be mochel, and then there's advanced layers of tzniut that you can choose to impose or choose not to, or like the Ramban, he thinks that Hezegriah itself includes multiple categories, some of which are about Isurin and might even apply to the damaged party, and some which are about damages, in which case they only apply when someone's damaging you and you actually care. But you see that both the Ramban and the Rashba, instead of taking the neat, conceptually clean way of trying to distinguish things, actively try to mix categories together, which is going to make things very hard to predict. The big nafkamina, as I said, for the Rashba, is the question of, could you have a category of Hezegriah that is not nitan l'mechila under any circumstances? Once you conflate Hezegriah of damaged nature with Hezegriah of your obligation to maintain privacy, yeah, there are certain types of cases where I can actually force Yehonatan to say, don't let Andrew look in on your house, right? You know, not that he would ever do that, and not that Yehonatan wouldn't want to maintain privacy, okay? Other people, in theory, right? But I think you see clearly from the Rashba and the Ramban, methodologically, is that while, again, until now, we've tried very hard to maintain categories, and we've said every time something seems not to fit, maybe it's a different category, right? That's not the intuition of the Rashba and the Ramban, right? They very much think if there are different implications, they might all be true, and therefore Hezegriah might really mean different things that are somewhat contradictory. Okay? Good. Let's stop there.